How many times you pull your yearbook out and read what was signed then?
Only maybe once since I graduated high school. It was because I was in an event with other people I went to high school with. And that was enough of that. Thank you very much. You've got to have lots of memorabilia. Or have you unloaded along the way, or is it all in your mom's basement?
It's in a box somewhere, probably in storage.
Probably.
Yeah, but...
It's like Indiana Jones at the end.
If I had to find it within the next 5 hours, that'd be tough.
Not so much.
I'd have to do some digging.
I found one of your cups.
I beg your pardon?
One of your previous
when
jobs.
When he was a catcher?
A coffee
or
cup.
A pitcher?
With your name on it.
Oh, really?
So I'm using it right now. Just for the heck of it.
Somebody, remember we had that
Quahog. You've been watching Family Guy too.
Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Remember you had
the
that?
The can, right.
So years after that came out, the Loop put that out for a marketing tool. Several years after that, a guy came to an appearance and he gave me a can of it, but it was empty. He had drank the cola. So he gives me the can.
Is that like drinking the Kool-Aid?
Yeah. What am I going to do with this empty can now? Right?
Oh, so.
But what he did was he opened it from the bottom so
the pull tab was still there.
But still, it's an empty can. There's no value to it that I know of.
Now, just watch. We're going to be watching Antiques Roadshow.
Right.
And somebody's going to have this,
I've got this
Gary Meyer memorabilia.
Would you be surprised to learn that it's worth $10,000?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Well, I still have my card. My Coho Lips card. Oh yeah.
I don't have.
You don't have that?
No.
Did you need one?
For what?
Yeah, you were. It was. Why would you need a Coho Lips card? You were the guy. You didn't need to join. You started it.
Exactly.
Did you ever wear your own T-shirt?
No.
Say no. Please
I don't
say no.
do any of that stuff where your name is on it. But guys in radio, they like to have stuff with their name on it.
Well, I found one. Remember, I found the satin little patch, the backstage pass with the teenage.
Yeah, you have more stuff than I do. Trust me. I don't have all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's too much. To your question, Leslie, no, I can't keep all that stuff. It's too much.
Doesn't Bruce want it for the traveling exhibition at the Hall of
Museum?
Fame? Yeah. They would. I'm sure he would love a Coho Lips can.
I don't have it anymore. I recycled it. When I saw the bottom was not a full can, there's nothing I can do with
it. Maybe he shotgunned it. You know, he opened the bottom and then he...
That's probably what he did, but that doesn't do me any good.
You don't want to burden your daughter with this?
No.
Here's all this memorabilia.
She's going to be like Yoko.
It's up to you.
She's going to be keeping the legacy going.
Great.
She's going to sell all your doodles,
my tablets.
All your tablets. From
that I write everything on.
You write everything on, yeah. Here's his tablets. It's like the John Lennon lyrics.
Sure. Yeah, just like that.
And as a healthy young American girl, she's going to look at it and go, what am I supposed to do?
Yeah, isn't this all on iPhone 5, 6, 7?
What's that company that comes with those big things that they pick at your house? iPods or something? Pods. Where they come and they store it?
Yeah, not iPods. That's something different. Yeah. But
or the ones who come and haul away your garbage.
Yeah.
Right.
Or
just 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Really, I'm really anxious to talk to this woman who has 305 total possessions. You have more than that in your drawer in your kitchen.
Oh, my gosh.
And this woman is down to 84 square feet and 305 possessions total out the door.
I've been reorganizing my basement, and I counted now. I got them all. I've got, with Christmas, my stuff, Elton stuff, wife stuff, some of my mom stuff, I have 70 20-gallon bins.
Wow.
In my
70.
Basement. 70.
And you have no children, so where is all this
stuff
going?
Well, this is my point. So now I've got to go through all these bins and cut those down into something that's usable, they're just going to be thrown out.
The problem with you going through your own stuff, you're going to go, I don't know. You need somebody that is not attached to it. Otherwise, you're not going to get rid of as much as you have to get rid of.
Yeah, you see all the stuff of my wife's I threw out. Oh, what's this?
Well, this is why I talked about virtual hoarding. You take a look at all these things. If you still have some sort of emotional attachment, but not so much, take a picture.
That's a good idea.
And then save
it.
It's now saved to the cloud, so you have that memory, but you just don't have 70-some
bins. Do you save buttons? When you get a button with a shirt or something, they have an extra two buttons usually.
Yeah.
Do you put them somewhere?
I used to keep them in my sewing kit.
We have a drawer.
And then all of a sudden you realize, oh, my gosh, that's from a sweater that I threw
away. I got to get this list. I printed out this list from the Internet. It says these are the things you need to get rid of if you want to start streamlining and getting down to the basics. And one of the things was buttons. Because we always get these buttons when we buy some new clothing. And I started to put them in a little box or something. They said, throw them away.
Yeah.
You'll be able to get a button somewhere. But those start to add up.
Well, and especially when you can look at the button and go, that's circa 1980-something.
Yeah.
It's big and it's flashy, and I don't have anything like that in my closet anymore.
We used to have those, and I threw them out.
You used to have what?
Those buttons. We used to have a drawer of those.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, these have to go.
But it has the matching thread. That's got to make it more
valuable. I know, but you don't even have the shirt anymore, and you still have the buttons.
Stuff we save. Steve, do you stave? Stave, Stoof?
Do you stave? Are you a train?
I do.
Do you stave, Stoof?
I am a train.
Yeah? You stave, Stoof?
Right, that's when I left. Or the shirt stays. You know, you get the little plastic stays that go in
your
collar.
Oh, yeah, for the collar.
Yeah.
You save those?
They come. You know, they come extra, and then I often need them, but I don't know where I put them.
What did you call those?
Stays.
I didn't know what those were called.
Yeah.
I keep those in with the buttons.
Well, that's always the same thing.
Right. But whenever I decide that I need one, I never can find where I put them.
Right.
And so Tim, he throws them in a drawer, so when he pulls them out, they're all bent.
Right.
Which defeats the whole purpose.
It really is amazing when you open your drawers and see what you saved.
No kidding.
The stuff we really all do it, right?
Okay. I have a pair of soccer socks that was given to me when I was a sophomore in college.
Because?
And they're green and white stripes, and we used them.
They were losing at 3 o'clock. I don't know what the score is
Since
now.
We're on the stream, can I say this? Okay. Shouldn't they say Diamondbacks every time? Because otherwise I hear D-bags instead of D-backs.
D-bag.
Well, that's all I play. They're in last place.
You hear D-bags.
Maybe it's just my ears.
You hear D-bags from whom?
No, I guess they're saying D-backs, right?
The D-backs, yeah.
But invariably.
It sounds like D-bags?
Absolutely. D-bags. Every single time.
Yeah. Well, how do you think U.S. Cellular feels when they refer to the park every time as the cell?
Cell, yeah. We
every
paid
time.
Good money.
U.S. Cellular's. Hey, no. Although I've said this before, do you think of United Airlines when you hear United Center?
Not at all.
No.
I don't think it rings as United Airlines. They should have made it United Airlines Center.
And you say that when a lot of times. You say United Airlines
Center. I'm trying to
give
them a little bang for their buck because somebody didn't think that they just keep saying the UC or United Center. I don't think of United Airlines when I hear it.
But now, even worse, U.S. Cellular sold its Chicago area service to Sprint. So now it's got U.S. Cellular in Chicago. And even though it is around the country, U.S. Cellular does not have service in the Chicago area.
Yeah, well.
So it's back to the cell.
All right, a couple messages here, and then we continue on the stream. Again, the numbers are as they are on AM 720, 312-981-7200. On the phone with me is Dee Williams. She has a book out called The Big Tiny, a built-it-myself memoir. And Dee, welcome to the program, first of all.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Thank you. I saw this article in the New York Times, and it really caught my eye because I see this number here. First, it says all of her worldly possessions add up to 305, and that's all housed in 84 square feet. And explain why you're living in 84 square feet.
Well, there were a couple of things that happened. I was diagnosed with congestive heart failure, this heart muscle disease, and I was afraid that I was going to kick the bucket sometime soon. My diagnosis was 1 to 3 years. And, you know, I was living in a big three-bedroom house, and all of a sudden my 30-year mortgage was looking kind of silly. So after a bit of time, I decided to build this little house and kind of get out from underneath my debt, get out from underneath my mortgage, and see what would happen. I set it up as kind of an experiment, and I was curious about whether it would be something that would last. And 10 years later, it's still working for me.
You've lived in this 10 years now in Olympia, Washington. It's in the backyard of a friend's house, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And how did you find a house that's 84 square feet? Wasn't that part of when you were at the doctor's office, you saw a magazine? Explain how you came upon finding a house of this size.
Yeah, I read an article about a guy named Jay Schaefer who had built a little house very similar to mine. And there was something about that. There was a picture in a magazine. I was sitting in the waiting room at my doctor's office, and there was something about this picture, this image of a really small, it looked like a summer cottage. You know, it looked like the simplest time of life, you know, and, you know, super pointy little roof, built above a cedar clad house. And, I thought that I could try to build something similar, and somehow by going small, by building this little cabin, I would, simplify things, maybe be a little less afraid of what was happening with my health, and, have a lot more time and money to do all of the things that I wanted to do, like go visit my folks and hang out with my friends and, go hiking for as long as my heart would let me. And, so yeah, that was the genesis, seeing that picture and tracking Jay down and, starting to build. And I did it myself. It took me 3 months and $10,000, and I landed in a perfect little house.
And when you went from your 3-bedroom house in Portland to the 84 square feet, you got down to 305 possessions. I'm sure you had thousands in your former house.
I think it was millions.
Millions
like
of possessions.
Yeah. When I was trying to get rid of stuff.
And how did you decide that, okay, I'm going to have one toothbrush and one bottle of perfume or one piece of jewelry? How did that come about? How did you make that checklist?
Oh, you know, when I was going through my big house, I had three piles. The first pile was stuff I couldn't make a decision on right away, like this beautiful oak dresser that I'd gotten as a wedding present years earlier, and, you know, stuff that I just couldn't quite let go of that was big. That stuff I farmed out to friends. Then there was another pile that was all stuff that could go to Goodwill, and that was pretty basic, like hoses and rakes and linens and kitchenwares. And then there was the tiny stack that I needed to make those difficult decisions on, like, is it this plate or that plate? Is it this mixing bowl or no mixing bowl? And ultimately, I kind of went with what would fit in the house and what I thought I would use most. And gave up on thinking that I was going to be, as an example, I was ever going to be a great chef. So maybe I didn't need the accoutrement that goes with, you know, chefing.
To give us some perspective of what 84 square feet is, can you compare it to something that we would go, oh, that's how big it is?
A bait shop.
A bait shop? Okay, for those of
it's
us who
smaller,
don't fish.
Smaller than it's a, you know, a tool shed. You know, it's small, but it doesn't feel Spartan. You know, it's, when I was coming up with the floor plan for the house, I had an 8-by-10-foot area rug in my living room. And I masked out the floor plan on that area rug and kind of played around with it until I got a, you know, where I wanted the couch and the kitchen counter and the bathroom and stuff like that. And so, yeah, 8-by-10-foot area rug, or next time you're standing in your garage, it's probably bigger than my house.
And you have no oven or refrigerator, right?
That's right. Yeah, I designed to have a refrigerator, but I built the kitchen counter wrong. I measured wrong. So I couldn't fit it into the space that I had made for it. So I just decided, you know, I pulled the refrigerator, I bought it, I tried to put it in, I couldn't get it in, and I thought I'd come up with another one that was smaller, and I couldn't find one. So I started living without one, and then I realized I didn't really need one.
Wow. And lights run by solar power?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
A sink and a toilet?
Mm-hmm.
No running water?
No running water.
Was your plan to live in the backyard of a friend's home when you got this, or did that just all organically happen?
I think it was a little more organic. My thought was, you know, I wasn't sure if I was going to live in the country or live in the city. I wasn't sure if I was going to be traveling. So I built it on wheels so that I could take it where I wanted. And I wasn't sure what was going to happen, and I ended up in my friend's backyard. And I still move the house. I take it out for school events and stuff like that, for Earth Day events. But more or less, it's been sitting in the same spot for these 10 years. And I'd like to think that if, you know, like if my parents got sick and I needed to go back and take care of them for some months, I could do that and still be at home.
What do you take advantage of from your friend's home that you don't have in your house? Do they let you just come in carte blanche and use the shower or whatever?
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, over time, we've come up with kind of a time that's convenient for everybody, for me to take a shower. And, or I, you know, shower at work or at the gym. And, you know, there's a reciprocity that happens between me and my friends. I mow the grass. I maintain the house. I, you know, I'm handy, so I help with things around the house. I run baseball shuttle sometimes for the kids. You know, it's an exchange that happens. And I definitely feel that they've been incredibly generous, but I think it's, I think we have a pretty good exchange there.
Are there any moments when you think, okay, I've done the experiment, I got to get a little more room, I'm getting claustrophobic?
No, I've never felt claustrophobic in my house. You know, I have, you know, not that long ago, I fell in love with this guy, and I was like, you know, I don't think both of us could live in my little house. You know, that's not going to work. And then another time, my nephew just joined the Air Force, and he's stationed nearby, and I really wished my house was large enough for him to be able to live with me while he's stationed nearby, so he didn't have to live on base. So, yeah, I mean, I've thought about, you know, my house doesn't work with a number of people. And so if my life changed and somebody else was invited in, I'd probably have to do something different.
That's right, because you've never been married, right?
I haven't.
And if that situation comes about, well, maybe then you park the little house in the back of a bigger house. Is that the plan?
You never know.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen. I would love to have the privilege of growing old enough to fall in love.
I can just see this conversation. The guy proposes, I'd like you to park your little house in back of my big house. Would you marry me?
Hey, I would invite, you know, feeling healthy enough and strong enough in my body and to meet somebody who's cool enough that would say that. That would be awesome.
Well, it's interesting, in the last, say, I don't know, 10, 20, 25 years, we've been seeing these so-called McMansions going up around the country. And then I read about a year or two ago where in cities like New York, where the real estate is quite expensive, they started building these 250-square-foot apartments. And and I looked at that, and I thought, okay, I lived in a studio apartment. It was 500 square feet, so it's half of that. And then when I saw 84 square feet, I thought, wow, I don't know if you can get any smaller than that. But you have.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, people do it all over the world, and they figured out there are people that live on their boats. There are people that live in super small efficiency apartments. I was just in New York, and I swear the you know, they were telling me that my house, my 84 square foot house, is like a 2-bedroom apartment in Brooklyn.
That's
so
amazing.
You know, I think people do live small, and so far it's worked for me, and I'm going to knock on wood that it continues to work.
That's true. If you've been to, say, Europe, when I first went to Europe, I was surprised because I had never seen how other people live before that. That was my first time out of the country. I was so used to things being big here, and by big I mean 1,800, 2,000 square feet. In Europe, you look at these apartments, and they're all tiny because they don't have the
right
space. They've been accustomed to that kind of thing. Over here, we got a lot of room. We're stretched out. And that's
right
why we got into these gigantic places. And by gigantic, I mean 2,500 square feet and beyond.
Right. Right. Yeah, I had taken a trip to Guatemala. And, you know, most of the folks that I was working with, I was down there to build a school. They live in houses without running water and without electricity. And they're actually about, you know, the size of my garage. I had, you know, this 3-bedroom bungalow and Portland when I was building my little house. And, you know, my friends in Guatemala were living in houses with, you know, two kids, grandma, husband and wife, and their house was smaller than my garage. So,
yeah,
you know, yeah, the rest of the world seems to figure stuff out, you know, living small. And there are more and more people that are doing that here, too, because, you know, not only does it make sense for how we live and how we want to live, but it's expensive to live in a big house.
And the maintenance, you mentioned the maintenance. You didn't want to clean gutters and do all the stuff that an average house requires day in and day out.
Right, Right. You're all of a sudden, all your time is spent, vacuuming and dusting. And
now, don't go knocking vacuuming. I like to vacuum. It's very zen.
I actually like vacuuming, too. I like mowing the grass, too.
Yeah.
There are actually a lot of chores that I find very meditative.
And that would be what you do for your friends that live in the big house in front.
That's right.
If you
That's
need to right. get that
it's,
kind of
you know,
fix.
It's a lot easier to wash somebody else's dishes than it is your own, and I don't know why.
Well, the book sounds very fascinating. I want to dive more into it. I just got it yesterday, so I'm looking forward to reading it. It's called The Big Tiny, a Built It Myself Memoir. Dee Williams, thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you so much, Gary. It's great to meet you by phone.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.